She's been called the design world's hidden gem, a role model for many modern women. C.P. Pinellas was the first female art director at Condé Nast and one of the most influential graphic designers of the 20th century. We'll explore her life through her art and recipes, her immigrant heritage that have come to life in a new book titled Leave Me Alone with the Recipes, the Life, Art, and Cookbook of C.P. Pinellas. Two of the book's editors join us. Sarah Rich is a writer, magazine editor, and brand strategist, and has written extensively about food over her career. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And Wendy McNaughton is an artist, illustrator, and graphic journalist whose work has appeared in many national publications. Wendy, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Well, Wendy, let's start with you. Take us to the origin story, if you will, the day in 2013 when you stumbled onto that hand-painted sketchbook at the Antique Book Fair. What caught your eye?
Oh, it was a very special moment. Sarah had given me a call and said, hey, let's go down to this antiquarian book fair in San Francisco. And I was going to go meet her there, and I got there a little bit early. I was wandering around in the aisles, and behind inside of a glass case, I saw a book that was propped open to a beautiful painting of sounds kind of strange, but a bowl of borscht. But it was spectacular. It was this bright fuchsia inside of a mint scalloped bowl, and there was this gorgeous hand lettering, calligraphy, and done like beautifully with a quill, very precise. That was the recipe for borscht. It looked very familiar, but I'd never seen the artist's work before. And when I asked the bookseller to take it out so I could see it, it became quickly apparent that this wasn't just any old reproduction. This was actually the original book. It was the original painting. And this whole book was filled with original paintings and hand-lettered recipes by an artist that I had never seen before. And when I asked the gentleman who it was, he said the name C.P. Pinellas. Sarah joined me shortly afterwards, and she was like as just excited and gobsmacked as I was.
Sarah, tell us about that moment of this discovery.
Well, it was really exciting. I mean, I was equally struck by how beautiful the paintings were. They felt so, they just felt very of the moment, as though they could have been done by an artist working now, and they were actually done in 1945. So there was kind of an interesting bridge of eras in the style. And then on top of that, the recipes themselves were all these recipes for old Eastern European Jewish food, which is my family's heritage and food. So it was exciting to see these sort of familiar dishes that I grew up with rendered in this incredibly kind of vibrant and, you know, in this way that had so much character and so much voice and kind of a celebratory feel.
And had you heard of C.P. Pinellas when you saw this work?
No, I hadn't. And throughout, you know, this was 4.5 years ago when we found the book. And throughout that time, we have rarely encountered anyone who has heard her name, even though we both work in the fields in which she worked. We work in publishing and illustration and food, and across all those areas, it's hard to find a person who's very familiar with her.
So I'm picturing you two there looking at this manuscript and then looking down at your phones, trying to Google, like, where did this come from quickly? Like, and, you know, just trying to figure out, you know, trying to piece together what this perhaps could be. Wendy, is that kind of how it went down?
Oh, yeah, it was exciting. We were on our phones and we were searching and we were looking up her Wikipedia entry, and this whole life story was unfolding in front of us. This woman who was so influential, as Sarah was just saying, all of her accomplishments and the fact that we had not heard of her, our jaws were just, you know, on the floor. And so we decided on the spot that this was something that we had to learn. She was something we had to learn more about. And this book was something that we had to get so that we could share it and her with the rest of the world.
And you had to do a little crowdsourcing among friends to raise the money to buy it. But that turned out to be a really good thing, right?
Yeah, it was fantastic. We called our friend Maria Popova, who is a writer and the editor of Brain Pickings, and Debbie Millman, who is an artist and a designer and really a leader in the field of design and branding, and shared this with them. And Debbie had heard of CP before, but had never heard of any of the work that we were looking at. They were equally excited about it, coming from the perspective they were, and we all pooled our money together and purchased it.
Sarah, how did the manuscript end up at this antiquarian book fair in the first place? Do you know?
Well, we know some, yeah. We CP lived in a house in Stony Point, New York, which is about 45 minutes north of New York City. And she died in 1991, and her some of her family members continued to live in that house. And it was filled with her work and the work of her peers. And she was married twice, and both her husbands were designers. So there was a lot of material in there from all that time. And this book dealer had gone to that estate and had taken some, had purchased some things, which he brought with him across the country. So, yeah, that's how we found it. But it had been in her estate. You know, it was a personal project that she did in the 40s, and her career spanned many decades after that. So it had been there in her home, and then it came all the way here for us.
If you're just joining us, we're with editors Sarah Rich and Wendy McNaughton. The book is Leave Me Alone with the Recipes, the Life, Art, and Cookbook of C.P. Pinellas. She was very influential in the graphic design world, the first female art director at Condé Nast, and her name in the masthead there on Glamour magazine. Sarah, where else was C.P.'s work in the magazine world?
She worked at she worked at Condé Nast for a few decades, and her Glamour was the first place she was art director. She also worked on Vogue and Vanity Fair, but her main roles were at Glamour, and then from Glamour, 17 magazine was just getting started, so she was the first art director when 17 launched, and she did, you know, she did the design for that magazine. And then after 17, there was a magazine called Charm, which no longer exists. Sadly, it was one of the really early kind of feminist magazines. The tagline was the magazine for women who work. And it was a magazine that finally treated women as people who would have, you know, real careers beyond their, you know, the moment of their marriage or having children and have full lives and, you know, intellectual capacity and all of these things that may not have been on the minds of magazine makers prior to that. So she, and that was really important to CP. I mean, she was, you know, she was a leader for women in her industry and a pioneer. And so those opportunities were not just great in terms of, you know, the creativity she was allowed, but also in terms of what that meant for, you know, for women and for her and her career.
The picture in the book of her on the telephone with her cigarette in her hand, her hair pulled back tightly in perhaps a bun. Wendy, what was her presence in the editorial process? And, you know, was she listened to by the men in administration?
You know, we say that, you know, nobody's really heard of C.P. Pinellas, people that we speak with today, but that was not true at the time. She was revered, and she was very well respected by people, men and women, in all the field. And she, I mean, despite the picture that you're describing, the photos that are in the book, you know, show that she was a very strong woman. And she really changed how art directors work across the board. She created the relationship between art directors and illustrators that exist today. Prior to CP, art directors would reach out to an illustrator and they would assign them not only an essay or a story, but they would assign them an illustration. They would say, you know, this story is about a Thanksgiving turkey, so draw a Thanksgiving turkey. And they would tell them exactly what to do. And that's not what she did. She would reach out to artists and she would say, here's an article, read it, and let me know what it inspires. And if, you know, tell me some ideas you have. And then they worked very collaboratively, back and forth in conversation to come up with the concepts and the execution, which is how we work today. She was also one of the first art directors to reach out to fine artists and invite them to create artwork for magazines, which is a practice that's, you know, done today and really just changed the whole look of all magazines.
I love this last paragraph in defense of food illustration. This takes us back to a time there were no computers, no microwaves or fast food, no Photoshop. There was just this long tradition of drawing and painting. There was attention, care, and play. There was time and there was practice. And you could see that in every cookbook illustration. Sarah, what was it about this attention to detail that struck you?
Oh, gosh. I mean, the way she captured the paintings, to describe them for people who won't have seen it, are they're the ingredients for the food as well as the cookware and the dishes themselves. You know, from painting to painting, it varies a bit. And then the lettering of the actual instructions for cooking. And she just captures these materials so incredibly, from the, you know, from the softness of a, you know, the green part of a beet to the, you know, to the metallic sheen of a stainless steel pan. I mean, every single thing feels like what it is, and yet also has this character that's very unique to her. It was the way she saw it, and she conveys it in a way that's really consistent across the paintings. And just really beautiful. I mean, obviously, food photography is amazing these days, and there's so much of it, and it's so beautiful. And, you know, Wendy can speak to this a lot because she's really at the forefront of bringing back food illustration. But even as we have all this wonderful photography, there's something just totally irreplaceable about someone's own hand bringing to life, you know, a vegetable or a bowl of soup or anything, really.
And Wendy, her illustrations of people, I'm looking at roast veal with stuffing, and it looks like a woman who is looking at the butcher, and the butcher is holding up a plank, and it's just, there is so much character in these people's faces.
Well, you can't leave out his butcher's apron that's actually covered in blood. Which is hilarious. Yeah, that is a fantastic illustration. That's actually her mother. So there's several paintings in the book of a female character, and that is her mother. And these are all of her mother's recipe, and she credits her mother on her cover of the book. Not the cover. We created a separate cover for this book with a wonderful book director named Roberto Devec. But inside of it is the cover that she created, which features her and herself sitting at a table, her and her mother sitting at a table, and her mother is featured throughout.
In 1923, C.P. Pinellas immigrated from Austria to New York City at the age of 15. She would become one of the most prominent artistic directors for magazines like 17, Glamour, Charm, now out of print, we talked about earlier, and Stretch. Her art, her Jewish heritage, her love of cooking, all coming together in a new book called Leave Me Alone with the Recipes. The editors, Sarah Rich and Wendy McNaughton, stay with us. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. What's your story of a creative find that's inspired you, changed your life? What's the story of a cookbook or a recipe that's special in your family? Have you ever created and illustrated a family cookbook yourself? Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return in a moment. Right around 1945, C.P. Pinellas hand-lettered and illustrated all of her mother's recipes in a sketchbook unknown to the world. That sketchbook disappeared and was almost lost for good. That is until it surfaced at an antiquarian book fair. The new book is Leave Me Alone with the Recipes, the life, art, and cookbook of C.P. Pinellas. The editors of the book, Sarah Rich and Wendy McNaughton, stay with us. You can join into the discussion, 800-642-1234. Have you ever created and illustrated a family cookbook yourself? Do you have a family heirloom like this? What's your experience? experience documenting family recipes. Join in 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Wendy, where does Leave Me Alone with the Recipes come from? Where does that phrase come from?
Isn't that a great title? I mean, I think it's a wonderful sense of, you know, when we're getting immersed in our world of like cooking and our world of making, I think it's just that wonderful sense of, you know what, I just want to lock myself up here and get lost in this land and you can go take care of yourself and do something else, right? I mean, I think it's the sense that we all have when we're getting creative. Which this is a project. It's not only CP's recipes, but the time that she spent sitting at her kitchen table writing and drawing these is just a testimony to her creative prowess.
Sarah, she was...
And I'll just...
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to add, sometimes people ask about the title, and I think there are a couple interpretations because, you know, there's CP's interpretation of her own experience, which was on the artistic side, and then her mother, who actually provided the recipes. And sometimes I imagine that is coming out of her mother's mouth. And in that kind of version of it, one of the women that we interviewed and who contributed to the book for with her own essay is Mimi Sheraton, who's like a legendary food writer for the New York Times, and she's in her 90s now, but she worked with CP when she was just starting out as an editor in her early 20s. She worked at 17 Magazine, and she herself did a book of in collaboration with her mother of old recipes. And when I spoke to her and asked her about that process, she said that, you know, she finally got into the kitchen with her mom and said, okay, mom, you know, we're going to document these recipes. And she tried to start writing down exactly, you know, what she was putting in, whether it was a half cup or three quarters of a cup or whatever. And her mother finally said, are we going to measure or are we going to cook? You know, and I kind of imagine this notion of like, just, you know, just leave it alone. Let the recipes be the recipes and let me enjoy cooking them. Because once you know a recipe, you don't want to have to slow down and think about the exactness of it.
She was pretty single-minded about pursuing her passion and thinking of the essay by Maria Popova for the book The Intersection of Food and Graphic Art, but she struggled to gain a foothold, and then opportunity came to her in an indirect way. So, Sarah, can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, the way it began for her, she went to art school. She went to Pratt in New York, and then... she did a little bit of work, client work. She did illustration and materials for a summer camp, and then she got a job finally at a place called Contempora, which was what now would be kind of like a design firm in the sense of a company that does kind of advertising and window displays and, you know, signage and different kinds of things for brands and companies. And as it happened, somebody who worked at Contempora was married to Condé Nast, the man, the person who owns that company.
Wow, yeah.
And so she had done a really fantastic project for Contempora, and he saw it, and he just said, you know, we should bring her into the art department at Condé Nast. And at the time, there was an art director there named M.F. Aga, who was a very kind of preeminent person in design. So her way in was as an apprentice to him, and you know, as the story is told, she, you know, there was no office for her. She had a desk in the corner of his office, but that in a way gave her the opportunity to kind of be a fly on the wall for a lot of what he was doing and to learn a lot. And then, you know, it only was a couple of years before she was appointed art director of her own title. So I think her talent, you know, really spoke for itself, but she had a great chance to kind of get swept into that world of magazines.
Wendy, as a woman trying to enter this all-male industry, she faced a lot of barriers. Do you think that her unusual, perhaps gender-ambiguous name, CP, helped her get in the door at places that would otherwise have turned away a female job applicant? And what about CP, the name?
Yeah, CP is spelled C-I-P-E, but pronounced like the letter C-P, which is also her initials. C-P is short for Zipporah, spelled with a Z, So yeah, that's entirely possible. It definitely could have. But she was just such a force to be reckoned with that once, you know, she was in there, like Sarah was just saying, her talent really spoke for herself. And she was no wallflower. She was a very determined artist, I think. And when she was in school, already she was showing exceptional talent. And there was something in her yearbook, I think somebody said, what was it, Sarah? It was like, you know, sorry, boys.
Watch out, boys. CP's already married to her art.
CP's already married to her art. So she was determined from a very, very young age and continued to be for the rest of her life. But, you know, she was a woman working in a time where even, you know, she broke down a lot of barriers. And even though she was well-known at the time, just to go back to the beginning here, Sarah and I and many, many, many people who we spoke with today have not heard of C.P. Pinellas. And a lot of that is because in the history books, as a woman, when we look back at the time of the mid-century, it's really all of the, you know, mostly men who are in the history books. And so it was really great to find this very influential woman and give her historic due.
And it takes, it sounds like, a village of women to make the historical do happen. You worked with writers and designers all coming together to make this publication, this happen. Sarah, what about that process and really trying to bring this book to life?
Yeah, you know, when we first got the sketchbook of hers, you know, the next question was kind of like, what do we want? How do we want to present this in book form? And we had to write a book proposal and shop it around to publishers. And we really wanted to have multiple voices in the book because CP had kind of multiple angles. You know, there are multiple angles from which to look at her life. Obviously, because the particular collection of paintings we found was food-related, there was a food angle. But, you know, it could have just as easily have been that we found another thing she left behind in her estate. So, you know, there was a big piece that was about design and about art. And so part of the initial process was trying to figure out who was still around that might have actually worked with her or known her. You know, there aren't a lot of her contemporaries around because she was born in 1908. But we were able to find some people who had been, you know, in the beginning ends of their careers when she was at the end. And so people like Stephen Heller, who wrote for the book, Paula Scher, who wrote for the book, Mimi Sheraton, excuse me, all had known her personally and had different stories, very different stories about their experiences with her. You know, for Paula, who is now one of the leading women in graphic design, she felt like they connected over the lack of women in the field and kind of the lack of respect for women in the field. You know, Mimi Sheraton had this perspective on her as this, you know, she was the head of the art department at this magazine where Mimi was, you know, first starting out and striving. And she had great details of just kind of like all the ladies going down to the, going down to the lunchroom. And then Stephen Heller had worked with her more in the educational context because she worked at Parsons as a teacher for several decades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, getting all those voices.
She was the first female art director for the magazine publishing giant Condé Nast. She paved the way for women in the design world in the mid-1900s. Her name is C.P. Pinellas. We're talking about the new book, Leave Me Alone with the Recipes, hand-painted homage to her family's Eastern European recipes. You can join in this conversation, 800-642-1234. Who has been a creative inspiration to you? Who you think deserves to be better known? Have you ever created and illustrated a family cookbook yourself? What's your experience documenting family recipes, family heritage on this? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. As a Wendy, you learned more about CP as you begin to really appreciate her spirit. And let's get in a little bit to her spirit. She was incredibly driven and accomplished. You have evidence of that in how others saw her. And yet she always seemed to make room to help young designers, particularly women. Can you tell us about that aspect of her story?
Yeah, actually, I believe Sarah can probably speak best to her mentorship.
Sarah, yeah, go ahead.
Sure. I mean, I'll just add that Paula Scher, you know, she had a great story, and I think that it's one of the stories I think of first when I think about this is, you know, Paula was probably in her early 30s when CP invited her over to her apartment. And there are stories of CP, you know, she loves to entertain, have people over. And Paula didn't know if she was going to a party or if it was just going to be the two of them. And she showed up at the apartment. It was just the two of them. and CP cooked them up a hamburger and like put it down on a plate in the kitchen and they ate. And then she brought out a poster that she had, which was an advertisement for a lecture series that was going on at the time in New York City. And it was called An Evening with One of the Best, and it showed all of the different lecturers that would appear during this series, and all of them were men. And she, you know, kind of slapped it down on the table in front of Paula and said, you know, look at this. This is ridiculous. These aren't the best. These are just a group of men who know each other and are friends and kind of are promoting one another and framing it this way. And, you know, and she was really, the way Paula put it is, you know, she kind of presents it with humor, and she, by the end of the night, they were laughing that they should have their own series called An Evening with One with Big Breasts. but, you know, they were sort of laughing about it. But Paula says, you know, in the end, she felt like it really was hard for CP that is how things were going. And, of course, things still go that way now at times. But I think her goal was to lift people up along the way, along with her. It was kind of, you know, rising tide lift all boats attitude about women in design, as far as we can tell. And, you know, she did bring in a lot of other talented young women that she saw and in her way, you know, helped them to get ahead.
Let's go to Beth in Milwaukee. Hi, Beth. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi. Yeah, as a kid, I remember looking through my mom's Betty Crocker cookbook. We're talking like the 60s, early 70s. And I remember I actually liked the spot illustrations better than the photographs. Just the style of the artist, it was so cool. And I guess another comment is, thank goodness for the internet. I've been able to find a lot of information about all kinds of, you know, art illustrators, you know, female illustrators from the 40s and 50s, 30s, in the magazines. And there's one, I can't think of her name anymore, I forgot, but it's just very inspirational. So I guess that's my comment. Thank you.
Yeah, and Beth, she's gone. She's gone there. So leave her comment and go. And Wendy, where can we look for these bits and pieces? Is it the recipe books to kind of piece together a person's life?
When you say bits and pieces, do you mean in other
in their talents, in their art, in their culture, and in their family tapestry? It sounds like recipes can be a window into all of that.
Yeah. Well, I think for so many of us, we are brought up in our home with you know, our family tradition of cooking. I know that recipes that my grandmother had taught my mother has taught me, and my mother put together a little recipe book for me. I don't know, maybe, you know, when I was around 20 years old or something like that, and kind of moving into adulthood to say, you know, here you go, passing these recipes on to you. And I think something that's really inspirational, inspiring about the Leave Me Alone with the Recipes and CP Pinellas is that she took it a step further. She took her family recipes and she took her culture and she took her art and she sat down and she created something to memorialize that and to share that with other people, to share it with her daughter and her son, and also to share perhaps with the rest of the world. From the layout of the book that we purchased, it looks like CP really did have the intention of publishing this. The pages are numbered and they're painted so that they could be removed and photographed. So So we think that she did want to share this with the world. And I think Sarah and I and a lot of other people find this inspiring and kind of make us think, wouldn't it be great to do something similar, to celebrate our own family history in some way, whether it be, you know, through writing a cookbook or drawing. And hopefully this will inspire other people to do the same.
Let's spend a moment here with the recipes. And I understand you cooked them all and perhaps added some more modern flourishes or adaptations. Take us through some of these recipes.
Yeah, this is Sarah talking. I cooked them all. and my sort of first step in that was just to set out to follow her instructions exactly as she had written them and see what happened. And so, you know, there were a couple of challenges in that. One was that some of the ingredients that she used aren't things that we commonly come across now. Like one of the ones that she has in a whole bunch of her soups is parsley root, which actually turns out you can find. I found at one of our groceries that has, you know, a really great produce department, but it's not something you often find, and it's certainly not a part of the basis of, you know, soups now. So things like that, you know, and then certain cuts of meat or just the words she used to refer to things that we now call other things. So I had to kind of do a little decoding. And luckily I have my mother who is so familiar with these recipes that I could say, you know, do you remember this kind of thing? And what do you think would work now? You know, but the way she'd written, like I said earlier, probably her mother and she did not sit down and spend weeks, you know, measuring and remeasuring and testing and retesting these recipes the way cookbooks are now done. So they're not, you know, very exact. And in some cases, they really don't result in what they promise. You know, the one I often mention is the meatloaf, because the meatloaf recipe, when I cooked it just as is, turned out kind of saucy and it wasn't a sliceable thing. You couldn't call it a loaf particularly. So I had to kind of undertake the challenge of being sure that they worked. And then beyond that, thinking about kind of what are some of the things that might be done to these to make them a little more appealing to a modern palate. And, you know, we live in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is, you know, is sort of the California cuisine style, you know, really dominates here. And I think in some ways is part of a lot of cookbook styles now. So I wanted to modernize them without going too far. And so it's a bit variable as far as what you'll find. The way the book is structured, all of her original paintings appear just exactly as they were, which means that those recipes appear exactly as they were. And then there's a section where each of those recipes has been sort of given a new life. And, you know, the chicken soup, for example, which is also one of our favorite paintings, is one that I love. Kind of just as she had done it. What is the secret to her chicken soup is that she cooked it with a short rib bone in the broth, so it gives it this really, really rich flavor. It's not just a chicken broth, but it has a little bit of beef in it. And so to me, that was like a revelation. I'd never thought of doing that. I think chicken soup is just being chicken soup. And so I kept that because I felt like that was really the essence of that recipe and what made it special. And then on the other hand, you know, there are some, like her stuffed cabbage, which is such a traditional recipe, had a really interesting kind of approach, which is at the end, you know, the stuffed cabbage is kind of like, you know, because now you can go on the internet and Google stuffed cabbage and you get 100 or more recipes.
Where do you begin? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so it's like, okay, so the commonalities between a stuffed cabbage are that there's going to be some ground meat inside and the cabbage leaves, obviously. But with her sauce, what she did, which I thought, what, when I first read it, was she tells you to take ginger snap cookies and crumble them up and soak them in honey and lemon and water and make this kind of like ginger snap cookie
roux,
blurry.
Maybe? Yeah, curry.
And I thought, like, what, you know, you're doing kind of what sounds familiar, and then you're going to put a bunch of mushy cookies on top. But when I really thought about it, what it was kind of a way of doing almost like a sweet and sour sauce, because there was the sweetness of the cookie, and then there's the lemon, and so for me, it was then like, okay, well, I don't think I'm going to write a recipe and tell people to crunch up cookies in water. So what's kind of my version that still stays true to the idea of a sweet and sour flavor, you know, and so I used some actual ginger and still kept a little bit of the sweetness in there. So they kind of span a range from staying very original to getting a little more creative.
C.P. Pinellas' sketchbook includes recipes for borscht, that's a beet soup originating in Eastern Europe, lamb stew, and goulash. There are simple and colorful sketches. The hand lettering is absolutely perfect. C.P. would be her own font, I think. The name of it would even be perfect. The recipes give a glimpse of C.P. Pinellas' Austrian roots. They're her mother's recipes brought to life in vivid illustrations. We're joined by the editors of the book, Leave Me Alone With My Recipes, Wendy McNaughton and Sarah Rich. Your thoughts on preserving family recipes, preserving culture and artistic talent at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about C.P. Pinellas? What's your story of a creative find that's inspired you? What's the story of a cookbook or recipe that's special in your family? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return to the conversation in just a moment. C.P. Pinellas' powerful role as the artistic director on a number of prominent magazines, it was unheard of for a woman in her time. Her artistic eye was revolutionary, and her work was considered a precursor for modern magazine design. She set the standard for graphic design in the 20th century, and now her sketchbook of her mother's recipes, her Eastern European recipes, and her immigrant story all come to life through her vivid art in the new book, Leave Me Alone With The Recipes. The book's editors, Sarah Rich and Wendy McNaughton, stay with us. Your thoughts welcome as well on family recipes and preserving artistic talents. 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Wendy, it occurs to me, CP must have been very busy working long hours. Did she have time to cook?
It seems like she definitely had a little bit of time to cook. She did have some help in the kitchen, you know, which was pretty common at the time. She did have some help in the kitchen, but she did have wonderful elaborate dinner parties and such, and she had some help, but she also would take over sometimes with those and do the cooking herself. And her daughter shared with us stories about those dinner parties where not only would she prepare a wonderful meal for people, but also she would create like little place cards for everybody and decorate the table in a splendid and very particular to that evening manner. So she was kind of the consummate artist in all respects.
Who attended these dinner parties? Who were her guests?
She had a really close group of friends that was in upstate New York that were kind of the big players in publishing and in art at the time. There was really a close group of people. She had some people named Edgar Levy, who was an artist, Lucille Korkos, who was Edgar Levy's wife, and she was a very well-known illustrator at the time. She was married twice. And both times to really influential designers. And they had a community of artists around them. So we like to imagine those dinners, they would talk, you know, about art, and they would talk about publications. They would talk about politics. They were a really influential group of people.
So she really surrounded herself with an artist community that could also then play a hand in making her job perhaps a little bit easier. She knew who to call.
Yeah, she was really a collaborator. Like I mentioned before, she worked with illustrators in a way that was really different than any art director had before. She was a true collaborator. She would work with phenomenal artists like Ben Shawn, and also she was known for hiring Andy Warhol very early on, perhaps being the first person to ever hire Andy Warhol as a commercial illustrator. So she did. She had incredible people around her who she worked with directly and also had a great personal relationship with.
Do we know what Andy Warhol's assignment was?
No, we don't. It's early on, though. She does. There are, you can see in the magazines, there are some drawings. He was doing kind of the shoes at the time and stuff, and you can see some of those in the publication she was doing. I think it was in 17 magazine. But he called her, in one of his books, he called her his favorite art director. So the Pinellas was Andy Warhol's favorite art director to work with.
Let's go to Tim in Superior. Hi, Tim.
Good morning. As I was listening to the conversation this morning, you guys made me think about a cookbook that is sitting up in my cupboard above the stove, and I pulled it down, and it's something that my aunt put together. After my grandmother passed away, she went through the kitchen, and she gathered a bunch of the recipes that she remembered her mom cooking, and she put together a nice little dedication with some interesting stories about, you know, you sort of know your grandmother, but there are so many stories you miss, and mm-hmm. she captured some of those. But the other thing that I found really interesting was, as I went through the cookbook, just the recipes told me a little bit about my grandma I didn't know. One of the recipes is called drink. Now, my grandma was very pretty straight-laced, and, you know, you followed the rules when you went down there. She wasn't a drinker. So this recipe called drink has two ingredients, 1 gallon of honey, 3 gallons of rainwater. Those are the ingredients. And the recipe, you know, I've never quite gotten around to making this because it is a little complicated. And the last instruction is seal, keg, and age for 4 years. And I don't have that kind of patience in cooking. But I just thought I appreciate your conversation this morning, as it reminded me of that. And as my daughters come up and we prepare for Thanksgiving, I'm going to be digging back through this and picking one or two things out of here to cook this coming holiday.
Oh, Tim, that is just such a lovely story. Sarah, what is it about recipes that speak to the person?
Oh, there's so much. I mean, you know, so much memory is tied to food for lots of reasons. I mean, I think part of it is that when you incorporate as many senses as you incorporate in an eating experience, you sort of, you know, literally bond your memory to those sensory experiences. So I think that's why, you know, you can taste something as an adult and it can just immediately send you back to being a child if that flavor is something that you, you know, experienced as a kid. I mean, there's just so much, there's so much emotion tied to it. And I think, you know, like Tim said, there's also so much to learn through a recipe about somebody's life. I mean, you know, certainly in these recipes from Sipi, because they were coming from her mother, and, you know, her mother would have been cooking at the turn of the century in Austria and in Poland, and, you know, and then they came over as immigrants. I mean, there wasn't a lot of money, and the recipes themselves are very humble in terms of the ingredients, and the ingredients across recipes tend to be very common, you know, so that you could make a whole lot of different things with a few ingredients. And, you know, that in itself tells you about kind of their status at that moment economically and, you know, what was available. You know, there's just so much to learn if you take apart a recipe and look at it from a number of different angles. And I think, you know, once somebody is gone, if you can still cook the food they cooked, it really gives you an amazing connection back to them.
Wendy, when looking at this sketchbook, you know, Sipi was wielding an enormous amount of influence over what women were wearing, what they were cooking, what they were doing. I'm wondering, did she find some escapism by doing this personal thing, this sketchbook? Was this about kind of stepping away from her work, or was it bringing her work into what she wanted? You know, how did that play a role?
That's a great question. I mean, I think we can only imagine. But she was somebody who seemed to be making all the time. So maybe it was a step away from the city, you know, and the office and the pace that occurs in a publishing house. You know, with that work, this was much more quiet work. You know, she painted this from what her daughter Carol believes at their dining room table, which is where she set up her paintings. If she did lettering, you know, sometimes she'd sit next to the window. And it's a quiet activity. I asked Carol about her working at home and what that was like, if it was a very private activity for her. And she said that it was actually pretty casual. You could come in and she would answer your questions. You know, she didn't really close any doors or anything. Mm-hmm. But it's a pretty meditative activity, painting and this kind of hand lettering. It requires a lot of concentration. So I think we can only imagine that it was relaxing, let's say.
Both of you work in this world, you know, having been in the world of writing and magazine editing and branding. How has this work of reviving this cookbook and bringing it to a public changed the two of you? And Sarah, you can go ahead first.
Oh, I mean, I think there's some really amazing romance to thinking about this industry back then. I mean, the magazine industry has changed so much since then for so many reasons. I mean, obviously the internet being a huge one, and then sort of the, you know, the downturn of magazines a few years ago in part because of everything digital. I mean, you know, it's just a different time now. And I think there's almost sort of like Mad Men-esque feel about thinking of this mid-century time. And of course that was advertising and this is publishing, but you know, it feels like it was a whole world, and a lot of people entered that world and really stayed in it for long periods, whereas now a lot of people who work in media and publishing skip around every few years. It's not as it doesn't have as much longevity from one role to another. So I think for me, it was a nice feeling to think about the history of the world that I'm working in, even if it's very different now. And it was just, it was inspiring also to see, you know, the details of the way she was creating, and I'm sure Wendy will probably speak more to this, but to see the actual logistical and practical measures that were required in order to create a beautifully designed magazine it's just so different than what we have now with computers, that it also kind of reminds a person of why magazines do carry a kind of magic.
And Wendy, I'll let you go here as we close out the hour. What is it about C.P. Pinellas that, how have you been changed through her work and through this project?
Well, when I first spotted her cookbook, it was like I had seen her work before. It looked very familiar. It felt very familiar, but I had never seen C.P. Pinellas's particular artwork before. But I saw in it my own work. I saw the work of Myla Kallman, who's a wonderful contemporary illustrator and artist, Julia Rothman, another illustrator. I saw so many of my contemporaries' work, but here was this woman whose name I had never heard of, and it was almost like she was this missing piece, this kind of creative, artistic, you know, grandmother that I had never heard of. And so there's this sense of being part of a lineage that in learning about CP that I think both Sarah and I have experienced, that we fit into a long history of creators, and learning more about that, and some people who have been overlooked, some women, and you know, as we know, there's so many people who are overlooked in history. C.P. is just one of them.
Wendy and Sarah, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks for having
us.
Sarah Rich is a writer, magazine editor, and brand strategist, and Wendy McNaughton is an artist, illustrator, graphic journalist. The pair are editor of the new book, Leave Me Alone with the Recipes, The Life, Art, and Cookbook of C.P. Pinellas. This hour, The Morning Show was produced by Michelle Johnson. She's also our executive producer, wearing many hats these days, provided technical direction this hour. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the Ideas Network.